girl posted a picture of how she was okay with her body. There was a like.
Believe me, you've never seen anything like it before, I'm telling you. You wouldn't think it. Like, you'd think crying babies, but not to that extent.
You're listening to All The Best. I'm Michael Bryden.
And I'm Jess Hamilton.
It's not often you get to hear us both on the show at the same time, but since it's our last episode of the year and we have a few announcements to make, we thought we'd both come together.
But before we get stuck into that, we've got two great stories for you today. It's that time of year again when we're used to being surrounded by Christmas content coming at us through our TVs, radios, magazines, advertising, and public spaces. And maybe you're the kind of person who absolutely loves that and you've got a different Christmas film or playlist scheduled for every night of the coming week. But then maybe you're not into it at all. Well, we weren't sure, so for our final episode of the year, we decided to go both ways, with one Christmas story and one decidedly un-Christmassy story, and both under the theme, I thought this was what you wanted.
Christmas is supposed to be cosy, you know? If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a log cabin with an open fire as snow falls outside. Down here, it's probably backyard cricket and barbecues, but wherever you are, it's family and friends, and it's warm and inviting. But that's not what we're looking at today. Today we're looking at the true, spiritual home of modern Christmas. Shopping centres. White Christmas playing over lousy loudspeakers, stressed out mums and dads scurrying to find the perfect present, and retail staff wondering if the time and a half is really worth it.
I guess like shopping around Christmas is kind of just like a traffic jam that's incarnate and it just follows its way into a store. Save for the honking horns, you got crying kids instead. It's overbearing. Like, you feel really bad for these parents sometimes, you know?
Today, we're going to the very heart of this world and we're going to meet the 21-year-old at the epicentre of it all, trying to give families what they want with a special role in a shopping centre in Western Sydney.
Ooh, Merry Christmas,
Christmas comes this time each year.
You're racing to the clock before it's opening time. And then you pray that your Santa shows up. Because he doesn't sometimes. When Santa doesn't show up, you kind of just sit there telling everyone he's feeding the reindeer and hoping he does.
It's the little Saint Nick. It's the little Saint Nick. It's the little Saint Nick.
Hello world, I'm Lily. I am Santa's little helper, the biggest little helper in a select Sydney store. I do the Santa photos, I take photos with all your screaming children, and I make sure they're happy, I make sure you're happy, while I bleed tinsel on the outside.
Christmas comes this time each year.
So when I work with Santas, it's typically like 6 day a week kind of job. Most days it will be like 8-9 hours plus. Sometimes it's like 5 hours if I'm lucky kind of thing. It's very, because it's seasonal work, it's pretty full on. But again, it's only for a month, so compromise. So we've got Santa One, who's like our regular Santa, and he is Brazilian. He speaks like a bajillion different languages. He's travelled all across the world, like world-class economist. And I'm not fabricating, like this is legitimate. Like he speaks like Portuguese, Italian, German, Korean, Japanese. Lived in Japan for 25 years. Brazil for like another 20. Germany for 1 year and now he's here. And he's like done marketing and all this stuff. And like he's obviously affluent. And then you'll get the other ones who like Santa number two, for instance, who is like a pizza driver. Who just does it for an extra bit of money on the side and who spends his whole shift trying to convince you that Trump is a good thing while kids are around. And then you get these other ones, like, then there's like Santa 3, he's like a kind of chill, cool Santa. He's in a cover band, he's in two cover bands. Like, I've been blessed because the Santas like I have are like incredible, like, I haven't got a bad Santa. But there are other ones who, like, you hear things and you just think, prima donna. But no, my Santas are great. My my Santa seem to enjoy Christmas? I enjoy Christmas. Customers are very 50-50. I think it really depends on their disposition. It's kind of like the typical retail curse where it's just like, where everyone says the job's great if it wasn't for the customers kind of thing. So the second Santa shows up, that's when we start having the kids come in, I guess. So parents shop with their kids. They've already got this predetermined image in their head, and you kind of have to recreate that with that minimal photographic experience that you have. You'll have this terrified child who is literally running away from Santa, pointing at their friend, they are crying. They obviously do not want to be there. And you just have the parent just like plonking him on Santa's lap. Like, it's me, maybe one person and some bubbles. Like, we are Rambo in this situation here, you know? So a kid freaks out nearly every 10 minutes. Believe me, you've never seen anything like it before, I'm telling you. You wouldn't think it. Like, you'd think crying babies, but not to that extent. Like, amidst all of that, and you just end up having all these, like, photos where kids are just kind of, like, phased. And then you get a picky parent sometimes who'd be like, oh, but they're not smiling. And it's like, your kid doesn't want to be here. When you think about the concept of what Santa is, I mean, in the most abstracted form, it's kind of, you can relate to the kids and their fear. I mean, you look at, just think about it, like there's this giant overgrown man, like, just that picture of masculinity with this massive beard, anonymous glasses, like the same look, same hat, and you see him in like a myriad of places. I would not push them to sit on that, on the Santa's lap. I would never push a child to do that. Because you have to understand, I mean, it's fear in its most like rawest form. Like, they don't even know what that is yet. So you kind of just have to let them have their space.
Hey, ready?
Everyone, look at the camera.
Pixie! Jada!
Look here, okay?
Jada!
Fire!
It's funny because people, even if they're interested in photos and the child is in a really good mood, the parent will not want that photo unless they look perfect. So if they've got like the little bit of chocolate, they won't have the photo. If the pants is a bit stained or the shirt's got a bit of a wrinkle on it, it's not going to happen. So I think Santa photos are very much about projecting that idea of, this is my perfect family, this is my perfect child. And it's things like that, because you'll see photos where, like, you'll take them and this kid has this massive smile. Like, it's glorious, beautiful, and I'll never forget this because the parent just stops me and goes, oh, he looks too squinty. He'd be like, just for instance, to say his name was Barry, I'd be like, oh, Barry, don't do the squinty smile. And you sit there thinking to yourself, but your child looks beautiful. He's genuinely happy. Like, just take the photo. Like, he looks happy. Like, this is how your child looks, whether you like it or not. You should like it. It's your kid. And it's just boggles the mind if you think about it because, I don't know, it's like they can't accept their kid for who they are. They'd rather have this, like, predisposed image where it's like an artificial smile, artificial posture and everything. I would take the natural moment. I kind of just expect it to kind of be like a run-of-the-mill kind of stand there, smile job, but the expectations that parents place on you, it's so interesting. It's a whole other world that you wouldn't know unless you were one of these people. If I had any advice for anyone who wanted to do Christmas photos as a customer, I would say to them, please, please, please come early November so you have more time with Santa, more time with your kids, you get a better photo, and everyone's budget goes up a little bit more, making our Christmas extra special. I mean, the kinds of families that do come through, they are fairly varied. I mean, you will get all nationalities. Interestingly enough, you'll get, like, people who are, like, Muslim and Buddhist and people who don't believe in Christmas at all, like, actively celebrating it, which I find really interesting because I don't know, I just find that interesting for some reason. But you get all kinds of nationalities, even ages. Like, we had one person who was 90 come in with her, like, 40-year-old son, and they were still getting photos together, and it was, like, it's really precious when you see things like that. It's really interesting. Like, Santa actually does actually bring a lot of people together, and you wouldn't think it.
That story was by Tegan Nichols. Now to leave Christmas far behind and give you a break from all the festivities and something completely different. Our next story is a collaboration between women who are fed up with a certain behaviour they keep experiencing with men in the dating world. It begs the question, do these men mistakenly think that this is what women want? We enter the world of hetero dating where boy meets girl, but boy and girl don't see eye to eye on one crucial topic, feminism. This was an interesting story for us to work on, and it opened up a much bigger can of worms than we expected. We decided to find out how women have reacted, coped, and responded to gestures of feminism gone wrong. We spoke to lots of different women about their experiences, some funny, some frustrating, and unfortunately we couldn't fit them all in, so here's just a small window into a big, complicated world. And FYI, this story has some bad language in it and references to sexual themes.
So actually, this was the first time I'd ever used a dating app.
My general approach to dating.
And ironically, it's the one that's supposed to be the feminist dating app because the woman talks first.
I will very rarely talk to a guy about whatever feminism that means. Because I don't.
So yeah, I'm on this date with this photographer guy and he seems quite stylish and he has interesting things to say. And somehow the topic of conversation turns to Lena Dunham.
I would say men probably don't need to bring up feminism explicitly on a date.
And clearly he's watched the show.
Like, unless the woman
because
does.
Because he's quoting specific scenes with real clarity.
I just think it seems weird to just out of the blue be like, hey, I'm a feminist, just so you know.
And he's going on and on and on. He's saying suspect. It's a crap show, she's the worst. And I just said, look, what's your problem with the show? And he said, well, it's not an accurate depiction of girls in their mid-20s in the city. And I just turned to him and I said, what the fuck do you know about being a girl in her mid-20s in the city?
I'm not totally sure that it is the guy's place to talk about feminism. I almost think that his role in this is to step down from it and let the woman talk about it and listen. Because by talking about it, he's putting himself in the centre of it again.
I can see how it would be tricky for guys entering the dating arena, which is already really daunting and already quite painful.
And I think perhaps he was trying to come across as quite learned, having seen the show and having interesting opinions about it.
I can see why it would be daunting to then have feminism thrown into the mix as this extra thing they have to navigate and they have to try and get right and they have to tread
carefully around. But I just called him on the fact
around.
That he can't really make assessments on what young women are going through, particularly seeing as he's a man in his mid-20s in the city, and we're not talking about a show called Boys, we're talking about a show called Girls.
I definitely think if politics or values do come up in some way in conversation, you can communicate feminist values.
But I think the bottom line to dating, regardless of who you're dating, is just don't be a dickhead and don't come up with assumptions about things you don't know anything about. It's not even about feminism. It's like, you don't know how I think about politics, so have a little bit of grace and have a little bit of consideration. So, do I feel sorry for them? Not really.
So, I had known this guy a little while, seen him around a lot. We'd been friends on Facebook for a bit. So I'd had the privilege of witnessing his Facebook feminism. Anytime a post came up about women's rights, there was a like. Anytime a girl posted a picture of how she was okay with her body, there was a like. Anytime there was a conference in Melbourne about feminism in music, there was a like and an attend. We went out a couple of times. The third time I went to see his band, and then we headed off to another bar, which he had suggested that we go to. And then at the bar, he let me know that he did not have enough money to buy the drinks, so I would have to buy them. I don't mind buying people drinks, but I don't like to be told that I have to buy someone a drink. I'd rather offer it. So when he said this, I think I was a bit surprised, shocked. He noticed my generally uncomfortable look and said something like, you're really into traditional gender roles, hey? I didn't see him again after that. Surprise, surprise. But I did continue to see his Facebook updates, one of which was about the Australian government's new idea to make women pay for their own pap smears, which was a horrible idea, obviously. And he thought so too and posted that this was an outrage, which was totally understandable because obviously then we wouldn't have the money to buy his drinks.
All the men I know who I would consider actual feminists and actual allies, they don't really feel the need to broadcast it constantly because they're just doing the work in their real lives. And I see them doing it. I see them calling out their male friends when they say shitty things. I see them posting things on social media about their strong opinions. Like, it's just a constant process of proving that you're actually dedicated to these values rather than just claiming to be.
I started chatting to this guy. He was really friendly and he asked if I wanted to get a drink sometime. So I agreed and we met up a week later at another bar in town. We were getting along really well. I was having a really good time. He was talking a lot about what a profound feminist he was. And initially I was really excited by this because I don't want to date a guy who doesn't believe that women should have equal rights and equal opportunity. So I thought this is a really great direction that this hangout is going in. And then I noticed that a lot of the feminist so-called stories he was telling and views he was sharing were a little bit off. He talked at length about how much of a feminist he is because he just loves cooking and he's passionate about cooking, which I didn't really get because I don't really remember feminism ever having anything to do with cooking. But I think what he was trying to say is that women love cooking because women are always in the kitchen, and therefore he's a feminist. So it was a little bit confused, but I decided to brush it off. And then the night went on, and we chatted more and more, and I kind of decided over the course of the night that, you know, I'd had fun, but I didn't really necessarily want to see him again. And so I said, oh, I think I'm going to head home now. And we walked out of the bar, and he said, oh, no, you should definitely come back to my place. And I was like, no, that's okay, thank you. I think I'm just going to go home. And he said, no, come on, come back to my place. It'll be fine. Like, it'll be fun. And at this point, I sort of found it a bit aggravating and annoying that he wasn't just accepting that I'd said no. And so I said, no, I live really close. I'm just going to walk home. And he said, no, I live really close. And he put his arm around me and gripped my shoulder and started physically directing me towards his house. And I just pulled away and I could get out quite easily. But I was so shocked that he just spent 3 hours talking about how much respect he has for women and how much of a feminist he is and how much he loves cooking, whatever that means. And then at the end of the night, just wouldn't tolerate that I didn't want to go home with him to the point that he was trying to physically direct me back to his house.
I think that a lot of men who falsely claim to be feminist and are not are really like well-versed in the language of feminism. And they'll use sort of rhetoric that we hear in our feminist spaces. And that can be really confusing and even gaslighting in a way.
It's one thing to use feminism incorrectly as a mistake on a date. And yeah, that's kind of funny. But it feels like some guys know what they're doing. And it feels like they're claiming feminism as a way of getting away with other stuff. Using a facade of feminism to build trust with women in a manipulative way can be dangerous.
I had this friend with benefits who I met through my local sex positive feminist community. And he really talked the talk of feminism, and he was very much about like consent conscious kink and respecting women's boundaries, and got really angry when there would be stories in the news about women being disrespected or harmed. So in theory, he was really feminist. But when we actually would have sex, oftentimes he would, quote unquote, forget my boundaries that I had set with him and sort of do things that I had specifically told him I didn't want him to do. And he would also make like body shaming comments sometimes that made me feel really bad about myself. There's this one time where he made a comment about my vagina in the middle of sex, and I was in subspace because we were doing some kinky stuff, and I started crying and panicked and left. And you're really not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do aftercare and stuff. It was really not a good situation. And then after I wasn't seeing him anymore, I started to hear all these stories about him from ex-girlfriends of his saying that he had abused them psychologically and sexually. And at first I didn't even believe it because in my mind he was still like a good feminist dude. I hadn't even really confronted all the ways in which he had been awful to me. This is kind of, like, this is why it took me so long to decide to cut him out, because I really don't, like, I didn't know and I still don't know if it was a ploy or if he really believed himself to be a feminist in his heart. Because I think maybe if he had some kind of personality disorder of some kind, like, I've thought maybe narcissistic personality disorder or something like that. Like, he seemed to have this conviction really strongly that he hadn't done anything wrong, but having heard the things that his exes said about him, like, they were really clearly wrong things for him to have done. So, like, I really don't know. But at a certain point, I just was like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter if he thinks that he's in the right, because he's not. So that's a dangerous person to have in my life. So I cut him off. I am really suspicious now of men who, like, loudly self-identify as feminists. Because to me, like, being a feminist or being an ally, those are not labels you can just slap on and wear. Like, you have to, they have to be verbs. They have to be ongoing actions in your life.
It's easy for guys to not stuff up feminism on a date. Just be nice, be cool, listen to the women, respect their opinions, and don't try and tell them they're wrong about their own views on feminism.
Feminism isn't a thing that you can turn around so you can get what you want.
And don't equate being a good feminist to being good in the kitchen.
I'm not sure what the answer is.
And then don't try and force them to go home with you after they said
but
no three times.
But it's definitely not turning it into something like buy me a drink feminism. That's not a type of feminist.
I also think on a date, there are smaller ways to communicate having feminist values. Like, sometimes I notice that men are really rude to a waitress while we're out on a date, and I'm like, not only is that gross and unattractive because you're being rude to someone who's working really hard, but it's also like you're being rude to a woman, and like that doesn't make me feel great about the future of this relationship. So just like showing your feminist values in small ways on dates can be like a really good like green flag.
I think, yeah, I can see how it would be difficult for guys on dates, but only because it hasn't been difficult for years and years and years. If feminism had come into the mix 200 years ago, then they would have had 200 years of practice.
That story was a collaboration between Jesse Perrin and Selena Shannon, with special thanks to Alex Dennison for her sound design. That's all our stories for today, but before we wrap up, we have a few announcements to make. It's with a knot in my stomach and a lump in my throat that I announce that this is my last episode as a host of All the Best. I started on as host all the way back at the start of 2014. Don't go back and listen, please. It's super embarrassing. Since then, I've grown along with the show. I've met new people, made new friends, and listened to a whole lot of radio. The All the Best community is so loving and so supportive and filled with the best kinds of people in the whole world, just looking to make good audio. I'd like to thank the Melbourne Collective, in particular Beck Fari and Bethany Atkinson Quinton, for all their help over the years. All of my co-hosts, Michaela Morgan, Pip Rasmussen and Jess Hamilton, thank you for covering for me. And all the producers, senior and junior, that I've worked with on the show. Lastly, I'd like to thank Jess O'Callaghan and Heidi Pett They were the features executive producers when I first started, and they gave me the opportunity to take on this role. It was a bit of a gamble, and I hope that it paid off. From the start, All the Best has been more than just a radio show. It's a whole community of young producers and seasoned radio makers all in it together just to make good radio. It's really as simple as that, and I think we've done a great job. From here, I'm going to leave you in the super capable hands of Selena Shannon as executive producer and Jess Hamilton as host. I'm excited to see where All the Best heads, and I know that it'll only get bigger and better from here. But stay as gritty and independent as always.
Michael has been a huge part of All the Best over the last few years, and we're really going to miss regularly hearing his voice on the show. We're sad to see him go, but can't wait to hear the stories he creates for us as a contributing producer. But now it's also a time to look forward and get excited about what the new year will bring. You may not know, but All the Best has been around for 6 years, and since we began, we've become an award-winning show, nationally broadcast and podcasted, and in that time, we've also seen the Australian radio storytelling and documentary scene grow and flourish. It's a really exciting time for audio storytelling in Australia, and the rise of incredible content is keeping us on our toes. So we're going to take a short break over summer and come back refreshed with a new look and sound to kick off the new year. To stay up to date, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we'll be announcing some exciting changes in the new year. And don't be shy, get in touch if you want to give us feedback or suggestions for our new chapter. A big thanks again to our contributors who brought us this week's pieces, and a huge thank you to everyone who has made content for All the Best this year. It's been a big year for us, and we'd love to thank in particular our supervising contributor team who have volunteered countless hours supporting and training emerging radio makers in Australia. Kate Montague, Jess Binneth, Beck Fari, Bethany Atkinson-Quinton, Caitlin Gibson, Alison Chan, Zasha Rosen, Tiger Webb, Beth Gibson, and of course, our amazing EP, Selena Shannon. We'll be back next year on January 21st.
All right, for the last time ever, All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and Triple R in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Bethany Atkinson-Quinton. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Beth Gibson is our new SYN Production Manager. Jess Hamilton is my co-host, and I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and also find our archive at allthebestradio.com. While you're there, subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes.